Good day, and welcome to the Laurentian Bank fourth quarter results conference call. Today's conference is being recorded, and at this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Ms. Susan Cohen. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us. This afternoon's review of fourth quarter and fiscal 2016 results will be presented by François Desjardins, President and CEO, and François Laurin, CFO. All documents pertaining to the quarter, including the press release and investor presentation, as well as the 2016 annual report, can be found on our website in the investors section. Following our formal comments, the senior management team will be available to answer questions. Before we begin, let me remind you that during this conference call, forward-looking statements may be made, and it's possible that actual results may differ materially from those projected in such statements. For the complete cautionary note regarding forward-looking statements, please refer to our press release or to slide 2 of the presentation. I am now pleased to turn the call over to François Desjardins.
Thank you, Susan, and good afternoon, everyone. A year ago, Laurentian Bank announced its 7-year transformation plan with clear objectives to accomplish by 2022. Achieve a return on equity that is comparable to the Canadian banking industry, double the size of the organization, and build a solid strategic foundation. Looking towards the future, we see opportunity in the changing behaviors of customers. Be it for their personal or business needs, they are increasingly adopting a digital way of life. By staying true to our value proposition, which puts the needs of customers first, we will stay relevant and competitive. Changes were required, and we have been exceptionally busy this year putting these changes into motion. After 12 months, we are well on our way to achieving these goals. Indeed, I am impressed with the work that has been done so far by the team. With respect to our first objective, to achieve an ROE that is comparable to the average of the Canadian banking industry, growth, expense reductions, and low loan losses allowed us to maintain our adjusted return on equity at 12%. This is quite an achievement, not only because we did this as we strengthened our capital position, but also during a period when the average ROE of Canadian banks is in decline. As stated last year, closing the gap on ROE is how we measure our performance objective. To double the size of our company, our second objective, the transformation plan calls for organic and acquisition growth. In key businesses, we achieved double-digit growth targets. In fact, our loan-to-business customers reached a $10 billion milestone, and residential mortgage loans through independent brokers and advisors topped $7 billion. Strategic acquisitions are always a priority for us and contribute to our growth. The CIT Canada transaction was a great opportunity. Indeed, our business services team had already been growing the equipment finance division, but this transaction takes it to a whole new level with the addition of a strong team, new customers, and well-established processes. Already rebranded to LBC Capital, the integration of this new business is underway. We also made great progress on our third objective, building a solid strategic foundation. We rebuilt the first layers of the executive team, reduced the size of the executive committee, created an operating committee comprised of senior VPs, and recruited talent in key positions. As well, we reviewed our performance management targets and compensation plans so that team members are inspired and motivated to achieve our strategic goals. Having a common focus within the corporation is extremely important. We reset our mission, values, and strategic objectives and engage directly with team members across the country to communicate and align our goals, aspirations, and priorities. We put in place the robust initiative management platform that allows us to focus our efforts, reduce execution risk, cut redundancies, and deliver results. Early in the year, we started work on all key initiatives, which include the implementation of a core banking system, critical backbone to becoming a digital bank, the migration to the AIRB approach to credit risk, key to better measuring our risk and thereby reducing the regulatory capital required to compete effectively, the optimization of retail activities necessary to efficiently meet the evolving needs of our customers, and lastly, the reduction of corporate expenses essential to achieving a better efficiency ratio. Given our achievements in 2016 and our favorable outlook for 2017, The board has approved an increase in the quarterly common share dividend of 1 cent to 61 cents per share. I will shortly return to discuss our priorities for 2017, but first I will call upon François Lorrain to provide a more detailed review of the fourth quarter and of fiscal 2016 financial results. François?
Thank you, François. Good afternoon, everyone. I would like to begin by turning to slide 11, which highlights the bank's good core financial performance. Adjusted net income in fourth quarter and fiscal 2016 grew 15% and 9% respectively. Adjusted EPS in the fourth quarter was $1.47, up 2% compared to with a year earlier. Fourth quarter EPS was impacted by 9% more shares outstanding, as well as higher preferred share dividends compared to a year ago. As outlined on slide 12, reported earnings for the fourth quarter were affected by adjusting items totaling $28.1 million after tax, or 89 cents per share. This related to the bank's decision to optimize its retail activities. The announcement to merge 50 branches over the next 18 months will ensure operating efficiency while meeting the changing needs of customers. As a result, we reviewed the value of the retail unit and recorded impairment charges totaling $22.1 million in non-interest expenses. Factors contributing to the impairment include persistent low interest rates, a competitive environment, changing customer behavior, and increased regulatory burden. Furthermore, as part of the planned branch restructuring, provisions related to lease contracts of $11.9 million and severance charges of $4.4 million were also recorded in non-interest expenses. The restructuring will lead to additional costs of approximately $6 million related to moving and communication expenses, which will be recorded when incurred over the next 6 to 12 months. On an ongoing basis, the bank expects to realize substantial cost savings from the reorganization, as most clients impacted by the branch mergers will be served by branches which are reasonably close to the old ones. The attrition is expected to be low. The drivers of our performance are presented on slide 13. Total revenue for the fourth quarter of 2016 increased by 2% to $236.4 million compared to a year earlier. Net interest income decreased by 1% as tighter margins due to historically low interest rates, narrowing of prime BA spread, and higher liquidity levels were partially offset by strong loan growth. Other income increased by 8%. Net interest margin, shown on slide 14, was 1.67%. The main factor contributing to the 2 basis point sequential decline is the seasonally lower level of prepayment penalties on residential mortgage loans. Strong organic growth in loans to business customers of 13%, combined with the acquired loan portfolio of CIT Canada of over $920 million, contributed to increasing the proportion of wider margin loans to business customers from 27% of the bank's total loans at the end of 2015 to 30% at the end of 2016. As well, growth in loans and mortgages generated through independent brokers and advisors contributed to the strong growth in average earning assets of 9% year over year. We expect margins in 2017 to be slightly lower than in 2016, given the current low interest rate environment. Other income, as presented on slide 15, totaled $87.6 million and increased by $6.7 million, or 8% year over year. Strong growth in income from brokerage operations and fees and commissions on loans and deposits were partially offset by lower income from treasury and financial markets. As well, income from investment accounts increased by $2.2 million. In November, one of our bank's one of the bank's clients decided to end its carrying agreement with B2B bank dealer services and take its account administration in-house. As a result, the bank recognized one-time revenues of $3.1 million. It should be noted that in the third quarter of 2016, a $3.1 million charge related to technology was also included in our core results. Slide 16 highlights adjusted non-interest expenses, which continue to be very well controlled and declined by 3% in the fourth quarter compared to a year earlier. Reported non-interest expenses were impacted by impairment and restructuring charges, as mentioned before. The adjusted efficiency ratio in the fourth quarter was 67.4% and stood at 69.6% for the year, an improvement of 170 basis points compared to 2015. As well, adjusted operating leverage was positive for both the quarter and the year. We continue to work towards achieving a target efficiency ratio of below 68% by 2019. Slide 17 presents the CET1 ratio of 8% at year-end 2016, an increase of 40 basis points compared to year-end 2015. In the fourth quarter, $155.4 million of common shares were issued concurrent with the CIT Canada transaction. It is noteworthy that the impact of the CET1 ratio of the previously mentioned impairment charge was limited to 2 basis points, as a significant portion of the charge related to software was already deducted from regulatory capital. Our capital ratios are strong and support the bank's growth objectives and our transformation plan. Slide 18 highlights our well-diversified sources of funds. In the fourth quarter of 2016, debt from securitizations totaled $7.2 billion and increased by 32% from a year ago. We continue to optimize this source of term funding for residential mortgages in light of strong growth in this portfolio. Also included in this amount was the bank's first securitization of LDC Capital's finance lease receivables of almost $400 million. As well, personal term deposits grew by 17% year over year, largely driven by higher term deposits sourced through independent brokers and advisors. The bank continues to have a strong liquidity position. Turning to slide 20, credit quality remained solid. The provision for credit losses of $10.3 million was just $900,000 higher than a year earlier. There were fewer favorable settlements in the commercial loan portfolio compared to last year. The loss ratio remained at a historically low level of 13 basis points in the fourth quarter of 2016, equal to the level a year ago and 3 basis points higher than in the prior period. The underlying credit quality of the portfolios remains good. Furthermore, Laurentian Bank remains conservatively provisioned, as shown on slide 21. The total allowance covers the bank's annual provision for loan losses by a multiple of almost 3.2 times at the end of the fourth quarter 2016 and compares favorably to the industry. Over the medium term, we expect the loss ratio to gradually move higher as our business mix changes, which should be more than offset by higher net interest income. Nonetheless, with our current portfolio mix, conservative provisioning, and disciplined education process, we expect that the loss ratio will remain well below other Canadian banks. I would like to say a few words about the government's new residential mortgage rules. Overall, these regulations will contribute to the long-term stability of the housing market, and all banks, including ourselves, are well positioned to adapt to the rules. With respect to the bank's residential mortgage portfolio, it is high quality and well diversified. Our funding is also well diversified and can support our expected growth. As such, we remain confident that we will achieve our 2019 targets. On the subject of mortgage risk sharing, the consultation period is ongoing and therefore it is premature to fully assess the potential impact. Turning to slide 23, we made steady progress in 2016 towards meeting several of our midterm financial objectives. However, for the industry as a whole, slow economic growth, low interest rates, intense competition, and increased regulatory requirements have contributed to the declining adjusted ROEs. A good measure of our success is closing the ROE gap between Laurentian Bank and the average of the Canadian banking industry by 2022, leveraging the adoption of AIRB in 2020. We are already making good progress and doing so while strengthening our capital by issuing common equity in 2016. While these issuances did impact EPS growth in 2016, the medium-term objective of EPS growth remains 5 to 10% annually. With respect to the bank's key growth drivers, we are advancing towards our 2000 targets. To conclude, we're very pleased with the core earnings performance in fourth quarter and fiscal 2016 and the progress that we're making as our strategic plan continues to unfold. Thank you for your attention, and I will now turn the call back to François Desjardins.
Thank you, François. So what's next? In 2017, we must focus on execution, making sure that the critical initiatives we started get completed on time and on budget. Our priorities include the optimization of retail banking activities by merging branches, simplifying the product line, and increasing the size and effectiveness of our teams of advisors. Revamping the B2B bank product offering to independent brokers and advisors so that they can better serve their customers. Continuing to optimize and reduce corporate expenses to improve efficiency. Advancing the development of a more robust credit framework by continuing to work towards the migration to the AIRB approach to credit risk so we can level the playing field in regards to capital. And working to further develop the core banking platform so that at the end of 2017, business services and B2B bank activities can migrate onto it. We will also work to effectively integrate CIT Canada into LBC Capital and ensure that Laurentian Bank Securities maintains its focus on select profitable niches, a recipe that has worked well over the last few years. These initiatives will propel the strong momentum that we have in our targeted niche markets even further. I am confident in the team's ability to achieve these goals and thank them sincerely for their continued efforts and commitment to our organization. I will now turn it back to Susan.
At this point, I'd like to return the call to the conference call operator for the question and answer session. Angel?
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, press star 1 to ask a question, and we'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal for questions. Our first question comes from the line of Manny Roman of Cormark Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Just wanted to ask a question on the change in the ROE guidance and wondering why you decided to change the way you communicate the objectives for ROE at this stage so soon, I guess, after you unveiled this program. Why do you feel the need to change the way you're communicating the ROE?
Well, thank you, Manny. As the Canadian bank ROE average declined this year, we're simply presenting the objective we stated last year as a gap. At the time of the transformation plan launch, the average of Canadian bank ROE was 17, and we were at 12. So all things being equal, we aim to be at 14 or 300 gap in 2019, or 17 or a zero gap in 2022. Now that their average has dropped to 15.4-ish, we're simply looking at the gap.
Okay, so is there, was it the deterioration in the peer ROE, I guess, would you say that surprised you in terms of how far it's gone this year?
I think from the industry perspective, it was more than we expected for sure.
Okay. And then I'm curious about your outlook going forward, because if you're talking about narrowing the gap to 300 basis points based on what you're showing for 2016, it seems like you're there already. So should we understand from this that you're basically, you know, all else equal, if everything stays the same, that you're basically suggesting that we should expect a 12% ROE for Laurentian going out to 2019?
No, that's not what we meant. We looked at restating the objective, but in this uncertain geopolitical time and not knowing what would happen either with interest rates for example, what's happening with Basel, and how that could affect Canadian banks' ROE average going forward, we just felt that after just 1 year to restate a 2019 objective was not prudent. So what we decided to do is just restate our objective in a gap way. If we feel that that changes, we'll just restate it, but as a gap.
Okay, I understand. Thank you.
And your next question will come from the line of Peter Rutledge of National Bank Financial. Please go ahead.
Hi there. First question is, what's the impact of seasonally lower mortgage prepayments on this quarter's NIM? Was that a 1 or 2 or 3 basis points? What was it?
Peter, François, thanks for the question. It's basically the 2 bips that you see from quarter to quarter.
Okay. And then I think next year you're going to have CIT for the full year. What? I mean, just assume nothing changes in the yield curve. What sort of NIM accretion would you get from the CIT acquisition?
François?
You should expect a couple of points from the CIT portfolio on a standalone basis. But
okay.
Obviously that's in isolation, but you have the other impact of the low interest rates on the rest of the business, the UK business coming in, that would lessen, not still profitable, but lessen the increase in the NIM going forward.
Yeah. And as I understand it, if the yield curve holds its shape or even steepens a little more, you'll have a quarter or two where your deposits will reprice a little bit faster than your loans, but then you'll start to get real NIM accretion. Is that a fair way to look at it?
It's a fair way to look at it.
Okay,
going
thanks.
Forward, to depreciate the steepening of the curve.
So we'll just have to wait out the next couple, and then it'll be pretty good.
Yes.
Yeah. And then one last one. Your impaired ratio, your gross impaired loan ratio, looks good overall, but in the commercial and other portfolio, it looks like it's moved up appreciably since Q1. I wonder if you could give a little color behind that.
I would ask Christian Debrouze to answer that question.
Well, it moves, but on the commercial side, it's a little bit lumpier because of the size of those loans. So this movement is not abnormal. We're very comfortable with the level of provisioning we have right now. I think we're showing in terms of our track record, in terms of loan losses. And some of that movement is because we have a very conservative allowance model that uses downturn LGDs. So we think these are very conservative. So we feel very comfortable right now.
Right. Is it equipment finance that's really driving that, or is something else?
It's not equipment finance.
Okay. Okay. So if your GILs are going up and your provisions are pretty steady, it kind of assumes that you have a high level of confidence in the value of the collateral. Is that the right way to think about it?
That's correct, yes.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Your next question will come from the line of Sumit Malhotra of Scotia Capital. Please go ahead.
Hey, Sumit.
Hey, guys. Good afternoon. First question is just housekeeping on that item you mentioned. I think it's in your registered self-directed plans line, the end of a client relationship and the gain you recognize. Could you maybe just tell me what the mechanics of this were, and more importantly, this has been a pretty steady line for you in the last couple of years. How does it get affected going forward after this one-time item and the end of the relationship?
François?
So the first part, Sumit, is basically it's a one-time revenue less any expenses to close off the contract. So that's basically it that we recorded after being advised by the customer. We don't expect that it's going to have any material impact midterm on our objectives of profitability and growth, as expected in the plan.
Well, I didn't think it was big enough to impact the plan, but just for that particular line, it should likely be a little bit lower than it had been as you move to replace this relationship in that particular business. Is that fair?
I'll ask Deborah Rose to give some color on that, Summit.
Yeah, as Francois mentioned, we don't expect it to have any material impact. Our business development group is always looking for a new business opportunity to promote our dealer services. We continue to be one of the largest carrying dealer organizations, and the recent changes in the regulatory market with the CRM2 and those type of initiatives really provide a good opportunity for the B2B dealer services group.
Okay, let's move on to some more important things. And one of them, and I apologize if I missed this in your prepared remarks, I did note that your comments on AIRB and the move to adopting that for your RWA calculation, you're now suggesting that it'll be 2020 when the bank is there. I think the previous target was 2019, and we discussed that a couple of months back. If I'm wrong on that, please let me know. But if I'm right, anything specific in your testing process that has come up that has caused you to delay this by a year? And is there any additional expenses that are required to the bank as you migrate towards this approach?
I'll ask Susan Pittman to answer the question.
You know, actually, due to lack of clarity around the regulations that a while back, and actually there continues to be some, but we had stopped the project and recently restarted it. So this is where the timeline has changed. So we're now targeting for the end of 2019, which is the fiscal 2020. The project is actually going very well on time, within scope, and within the guidelines so far.
Yeah, so for clarity's sake, the project will be completed by the end of 2019, but the benefits of it, you can only feel it in 2020.
Okay, so still a few years to go. I'm sure we'll be hearing regular updates from you as we get to that. But basically, from your perspective, 3 years from now, we'll be getting ready to migrate to that standard.
Yes.
And last one for me is in and around the announcement of the branch closing. I think we've certainly thought a lot about how this will benefit the efficiency metrics and the operating leverage of the bank. And frankly, that's something you folks have been doing pretty well for a few years now. My question is more to do with revenue, and you know, what are some of the consequences that we will see to Laurentian as revenue? I know you're going to have the CIT Canada deal coming in, so that will provide some lift to the top line. But at least from my perspective, this has really been one of the challenges for LB, is getting revenue growth moving in this low interest rate environment. So in your view, does the gradual closing of these branches offset a lot of the natural benefit you would get from the acquisition, or is it not going to be as significant as I might be thinking here?
I'll ask Stéphane Therrien to
Yeah, thanks for the question. One thing to note is that the majority of these branch mergers won't have a major impact on the proximity of the branches to our customers. So we don't foresee major revenue going down, for sure. We're actually looking to stay our revenue line pretty much flat.
Do you have an estimate on any attrition rates here? Do you expect to keep the vast majority of the deposits related to these branches? Is there a number you can share from us in that regard? Share with us in that regard.
Well, the number we can share is that for 70 to 75% of these branches, we're talking minutes away distance between the old branches to the new one. So again, we don't expect major losses there.
All right. Thank you for your time.
Thanks.
Your next question will come from the line of Doug Young of Desjardins Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Just on the NIM side, just want to clarify a few things. I think you mentioned that there was additional liquidity that you're holding. I was wondering, was that a big impact on NIMs, and if you can quantify that, and is that something that would or could reverse? And then and I just want to clarify that I heard that you're expecting your NIMs in 2017 to decline from 2016 levels, and just want to confirm that.
So from year to year, basically, roughly 3 to 4 bps, Doug, is the impact of the liquidity year over year. As we build the liquidity for the acquisition, so we held it most of the year, we still have some liquidity, so you should see by the end of the first half of the year that liquidity really to go down to a much lower level.
That would be a potential. Yeah, okay.
So that would be a potential increase, like contributor to the NIM of the corresponding number of bps of 3 to 4 compared to last year. So that's the first part. The second part is yes, we expect the in this low interest rate environment, we still expect that the compression in NIM in 17 versus 16 level. But as said before, everything we record on the books is profitable, and as even if we've seen some increases in long-term rates recently, the overall rates are very low, and if that continues, it will keep putting pressure on the margins. But the advent of CIT and the increase of business services in the mix should alleviate some of that pressure as well. NIM is one thing. We look at NII growth and also at the ROE as we put these assets on the book going forward. And even in that low interest environment, we show that we maintain our ROE going forward in the year.
And when you're thinking NIM down, you know, offsetting the CIT and the liquidity items, are you thinking a few basis points, or could this be in the 5 to 10 basis point range? I'm just trying to get an idea.
A few less than 5.
Okay. The second is just on the $3.1 billion gain that you recorded. I just want to make sure that that was not backed out of the adjusted number that you show. Is that correct?
It remained in the core earnings and results.
And is there a reason why you would not break that out? I mean, we can always make our own adjustments, but I'm just curious, is there something I'm missing on that item?
We felt it was a small item. It's not necessarily material, and we had a negative in the third quarter. We didn't show it as an adjustment. We have a positive in this quarter, so we might have a few here and there along the way, and we don't feel that it's like true restructuring items like the ones we have of the higher magnitude that we recorded in this quarter. For that reason, we left it there, but we explained clearly what the nature of it is.
Okay, and then just lastly, on the PCL side, I got most of your comments, and I think you're also expecting a slight migration up in PCLs over the next 2 years as the mix shifts. You know, is this something that, again, year over year, are you thinking more as that mix shift happens of 2 to 3 basis points per year, or which why I would imagine it wouldn't be more material than that, but I'm just trying to get a sense of what type of shift we could see in the PCL rate.
Yes, on the blue.
Yeah, well, I would say that the shift will stay in the high teens over the coming years as the portfolio shifts.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And And your next question will come from the line of Lamar Perso of TD Securities. Please go ahead.
Thanks.
Hey, Lamar.
Hey, guys. First, a numbers-based question. Was there anything unusual in nature and other income outside of the one-time gain on the termination of the agreement? I ask this because if I look at lending fees in your sub-pack, there's some pretty strong growth this quarter. Generally, it looks to bounce around in the low to mid $13 million range, but this quarter was over $15 million. What drove the increase?
Nothing significant, Lamar. We'll look at it. We may look at it deeper, but nothing that strikes unreasonableness or outlying.
Okay, now
Go ahead. Now we had the market, the capital market was better this quarter than previously, especially at the beginning of the year. But also we had the liquidity, so the treasury was a bit lower as well. But that's our explanation for our main explanations for the quarter in other income.
Okay, thanks. So the restructuring and impairment charge announced during the quarter was a fairly significant one. I'm wondering if you could give any additional details surrounding expected cost savings associated with the charges that will flow through to the bottom line. To be clear, I'm asking on a net basis, because at your investor day, you are clear in suggesting that a substantial portion of the earlier cost savings will be reinvested into the business. So I'm wondering net-net if any will flow through to the actual bottom line.
I'll ask Stephen Therrien to give some color.
Our goal in retail is to lower our efficiency ratio. So these restructuring are in line with this goal of becoming more efficient.
I may add to this, Lamar, that obviously we expect additional costs, but the savings will be contributing. The investments will have another part of the plan, and all in all, we maintain the objectives of meeting our ROE, net income, EPS growth, and NII growth that we have going forward. So the savings we anticipate on this will, some of them will be reinvested, so over the other project.
Okay, so the reason why I'm asking this question is because if I look at your efficiency ratio target, you guys maintained it at less than 68%. This quarter, you're already ahead of that. You're at 67%. So if I look at top of the house, you're not expecting to lose much revenues from the branch closings. Margin pressure should eventually alleviate itself. And then you're getting these cost savings. How is the 68% still relevant? Because shouldn't you guys come in below that if I take just a really high-level view of where you're going in terms of costs and revenues?
You're right, and there's a little bit of conservatism in our comments this quarter, just because the last quarter, yes, we did have that result in the efficiency ratio, but overall on the year, it's been closer to 69. As an overall achievement, right, I think that what we've said is that we wanted to bridge the gap of performance with the big six Canadian banks, right? And we didn't want to do it one quarter or we didn't want to do it two quarters. We wanted to do it on a permanent basis. So the 2019 objectives, gets us there. But the real relevant objective, the strategic objective, is to get us to permanently close the gap. So we stated 2018 objectives. I think that, by prudency, we didn't want to restate those things only 1 year in, especially that there's a lot of movement in the world. But you are right. In general, the comments that we're giving you is we will continue to have margin pressure. That will have an impact. We're fighting that with growth. And our growth is profitable. We're reducing expenses, and we're doing that in corporate and in retail. We are expecting not to have a lot of runoff on the revenue from the retail perspective, but there are some costs to doing what we planned. originally at the investors forum, we had said that we were going to go from 100 branches to 150 branches to 100. We had planned to do that as leases expired. And the reason that we took provisions this quarter is because we accelerated that plan. And now instead of doing it over 4.5 years, we're doing it over 18 months. That's, you know, lay of the land type of thing. So that the efforts that we made this year to maintain our ROE were not insignificant. But just in terms of prudency, we're saying, you know, stay the course.
Okay. And then on the topic of restructuring, are we through the restructuring charges in the retail division, or do you think the bank has more to do there? And I guess I'll extend it to any other division across the bank as well.
François Marin?
Obviously, as mentioned, Lamar, we expect some additional $6 million related to moving from that restructuring itself that will be incurred from an accounting perspective. We couldn't book it now, front-load it, so it will be incurred in the six to 12 months for the branches that will be merged. Obviously, if we accelerate that branch network resizing plan for any further, any faster, there could be other restructuring charges, but they wouldn't be as material as the one we've seen so far, depending on the number of branches, obviously.
Yeah, thanks, guys. That's it for me.
Thanks a lot for the questions.
And your next question will come from the line of Bart Zierowski of Canaccord Genuity. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. I just had a question on the recent mortgage market reforms, and I'd like to ask it both from a volume side and a funding side. So on the volume side with respect to B2B bank business, curious to know if you see this as a net positive or net negative for volumes. And then on the funding side, just as securitization for insured mortgages becomes a bit more difficult, what kind of NIM pressure, if any, you're expecting from those? Thanks.
I'll ask Deborah Rose to answer the first part of your question, and then I'll ask Susan Kutzman for the second.
Okay, thanks. Overall, we see these regulations as contributing to the long-term stability of the housing market, and all banks, including ourselves, are well-positioned to adapt to the rules. With respect to the growth in the portfolio, we continue to expect that the strong independent broker network that we have built will continue to generate the double-digit growth we've been seeing, and are still well-positioned to achieve the $9 billion objective in 2019.
And Susan?
Oh, I can answer that, I guess, twofold. To add to Deborah's comments, of the mortgages that we originated in 2016, only a small percentage, under 5%, would not have qualified under the new rules, and that's assuming that the applicants didn't look for a lesser-priced house or find additional cash for their down payment. And as on the funding side, it's not a material amount relative to our total funding of the bank.
Okay, thanks for that. And then just to follow up, when I look at your year-over-year organic loan growth of 8%, what type of volume are you expecting for next year, and what would the sources of that loan growth be?
I'll ask Stéphane Therrien to answer, and then Deborah Rose.
In business services, the guidance that we gave are still good in terms of growth. So we're still aiming, we're at $10 billion right now, and we're still aiming at $13 billion by 2019.
And Deborah?
Yeah, and for B2B, we continue to expect to have the double-digit growth, probably more in the area of the teens versus the 20% range, but we continue to have the same projections.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks so much.
Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. And we'll take our next question from Sohrab Movahedi of BMO Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Just a couple of questions here. A couple of times on the call, I think you've mentioned that the new business you're writing is profitable, notwithstanding the margin pressure. How do you measure that profitability? Are you talking about it in terms of it being ROE accretive?
Yeah. What we say is, no matter what the NIM is,
it contributes NII and ROE. Basically, that's how we calculate profitability of products coming into the books.
I mean, Francois, just so that I can clarify, you mean it contributes to ROE at least the 12% or higher range, or is it, or is it just growth? I just want to clarify this.
It contributes to the 12%. Obviously, we have other costs that like treasury and liquidity, but overall they bring more than 12%. So when we include everything, we have 12%.
I guess the message here, right? The message here is that you know, the targets that we set, you know, instead of having targets in every business, regardless of the performance of the individual product, our high growth targets are in businesses that are accretive to the ROE, you know, to compensate for margin compression on, you know, funding and on other businesses that would not be.
Right. And Francois, I mean, you know, if you move slowly, we'll ask you a question, why are you moving slowly? When you move quickly, we'll ask you why you're moving quickly. But why the decision to accelerate the branch closings?
Thank you for the question. I think that you know, changing customer behaviors is part of the answer, but I'll let Stéphane Therrien give you some color on what's happening in retail.
Yeah, we announced at the Investor Day our willingness to move from directionally 150 to 100 branches. That was directionally. Then we did the complete study of looking at our current footprint in Quebec and feel that we needed and had to make some adjustment earlier than in the four-year plan that we thought of first. So we take this opportunity to move faster and to move in the next 18 months.
And I know that I think on a couple of occasions you've said that because the branches are within minutes of each other, you expect there to be limited, maybe even immaterial business loss here. But besides the proximity of branches, is there any other reasons you would point to as to why there shouldn't be revenue lost here?
Yeah, we also completed a full segmentation exercise of our entire client database, and we look at where the market will be in the next couple of years, and then we lay out where we should be from a value proposition in terms of where we need to be for the customer that we want to continue to serve, and that's where we decided where we wanted to be, and thus the decision to close 50 branches.
All in all, over the past 25 years or so, the retention rates post merger of branch mergers has been going up. Right, so we've seen some evidence within our walls, but also in other financial institutions, as customers don't go to branches daily anymore or even weekly. You know, the proximity of the branch becomes a lot less important to them, and therefore, you know, having to go an extra couple of streets to get there makes it just as easy. So it's part of the equation.
Okay, I mean, not to belabor the point, Francois, but is there a way for you to monitor how the closures are trending relative to your expectations and modify the pace if need be so that you don't lose any more business than you were planning on?
Stéphane?
We survey our customer before doing that. The other thing that we did as well is that we established a complete list of KPI to follow our progress. But so far, in all the survey results that we have from our customer, proximity of moving from point A to point B, if it's relatively small distance, is not a major factor in their decision to deal with us.
Okay. And maybe this is just for maybe it's a bit of a tidbit detail here, but it would be good if you tell us exactly which banks you're using and which ROEs to come up with the basis of comparison of yours to the major banks. Thank you very much.
It's the Big Six.
Adjusted ROE of the Big Six. Thank you, Beth.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, welcome. Thank you, Sarah.
And our next question comes from the line of Darko Mihalik of RBC Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you. I'm going to start off with a really simple question and get a little more detailed as I go. When I say simple, I really want to understand something perfectly clear here. When you say you're merging 50 branches, that's not taking 50 branches and turning them into 25. That is actually reducing by 50 so that your end, at the end of 18 months, you are below or around 100. Is that the way I should think of it?
That is correct.
Okay. And so,
as you know, the opportunity here, right, is that retail services is highly concentrated on the island of Montreal because it emanates from the Montreal district and savings city and district savings bank. So historically, many branches in a very tight geographic area.
Is there any upgrades you have to do to any of the existing branches to take on the extra volume?
Stefan?
Nothing major at this point for the next 18 months.
So why wouldn't we not just say to ourselves, if you're taking out one-third of your branches, why shouldn't we just chop one-third of the expenses in our models down and keep the revenues the same? What should I be thinking about to prevent me from doing that in the model?
François? I guess you could be right when you take the cost of the branches, but there's a lot of back office operations that are not necessarily impacted by the reduction of the number of branches. If we keep those customers, like we assume we keep those customers, so the flow of operations and the back office and the credit and all these doesn't go down necessarily.
The IT costs, back office costs, marketing costs, head office costs, and revenue lines remain relatively stable. We announced a certain number of positions, around 300, that we would eliminate by attrition, but we are maintaining the customer base, so financial advisors in our branches remain at the same level or try to grow that team. And then the cost of the real estate and leases and the cost of the 300 positions that you have to eliminate.
Fair enough. And I think I can fiddle with the model based on that. The follow-up question to that is the remaining branches that are left behind, are those mostly leased or do you own them?
Yeah, mostly leased. We only own a very few.
Okay. And then I guess the final question is, since there's no other costs related to the remaining or incremental costs for the remaining branches, is there any other thing that I should be thinking about, like some sort of an internet launch or some sort of advertising campaign or something else that should basically be an elevated level of cost for the next 18 months while you go through this process and then further reduce or further decline as we get into 2018 and 2019?
No, you can see, no. There's no major expenses like that are forecasted for the next 18 months.
And there's no regulatory procedures for closing these 50 branches?
There is, and we're following all the regulatory rules out there for sure.
Most of these rules are in the regards to communication times?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank
you. It appears there are no further questions at this time. Ms. Cohen, I'd like to turn the conference back to you for any additional or closing remarks.
Thank you for joining us today. If you have any further questions, our contact information is included at the end of the presentation. We look forward to speaking with you again at our first quarter 2017 conference call on February 28th. In the meantime, enjoy the holiday season.
This concludes today's call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect your line and have a wonderful day.